We'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we are recording this podcast, the Darug, Gundungurra, Ngunnawal and Gambri peoples. We pay our respects to elders past and present, and we recognise the continuing relationship between First Nations people and their country.
We would also like to acknowledge our privilege as cis, white, passing. What else are we?
What else are we?
All of the privileged things. We would like to acknowledge that we speak from a privileged standpoint, and we can't speak on behalf of all of the diverse people that make up the sex work industry, and our experiences are very limited.
Welcome to Somebody You Love, or The Sale of Two Titties. I'm Jenna Love.
And I'm Holly Hart.
And we're experts in disappointing our parents, breaching community guidelines, and banging the people who vote against our rights. So a little while ago, I created these like infographics to share on my personal social media accounts because I'm a little bit extra, and they were explaining basically how best to interact with me as Jenna Love, which probably sounds very weird because I am a bit of an oddball, but I'd like recently had this combo of people. Are you shaking your head at me?
Oh, no, sorry. Oh. I'm shaking my head because I think it's genius. Which I recently had contacted you saying, can I use the same things? Yeah. I don't have much personal social media now, but I think it's fantastic because it is really confusing for civilian people who, and we've received questions from people who say, oh, I've found out that somebody I know is a sex worker. Mm-hmm. I've seen their, how do I say, or like what's appropriate.
Yeah,
and I think it's just so good. I think it was genius of you.
Yeah. And I'd had this like wild combo of people being far too aware of boundaries and people being not at all aware of boundaries. So I had a number of friends who had come across my Jenna social accounts, like it might have been recommended to them on TikTok or whatever. And they were like, oh, I want to follow that and be supportive because you're my mate and I love what you're doing. But they didn't know if that would be seen as creepy because obviously a lot of my stuff is sexualized. And particularly like one of my friends who's gay, like I think she was like, well, will you think that I'm creeping on you if I, you know, and I was like, please creep on me.
Please creep on me.
And then on the other side, I'd had these two encounters, one which was one of my husband's relatives asking for my OnlyFans name. And one was a close friend of mine's recently, she'd recently separated from her husband and then he contacted me for a booking. And so both of those cases, I was like, wow, the boundaries with these men. But then all my friends, I was like, no, you can definitely support. So anyway, I did this like infographic and it was like, here's how you can inquire.
Like
these
a flow
are the
chart.
These are the rules. Exactly. What's our connection? Yeah. What are you trying to get out of me? And yeah. And one of those rules was that I always encourage anyone who's thinking about getting into the industry to get into contact with me. Or someone they know in the industry. Like, I don't want people going into it on their own, like so many of us did, you know. And so if you're thinking about it, I always, always say, please reach out and ask questions. And actually a friend of mine, or someone I didn't even know very well in high school, reached out to me and we've been chatting ever since. But the caveat with that rule is, I said, unless you're a cishet man, basically. And then a friend of mine who is a regular listener of the podcast as well, she asked me about this because she was kind of confused by the distinction. She had heard on the podcast that we talk about the sex industry being this place where, you know, people from all walks of life are able to earn money and are welcomed, and that there's a huge amount of diversity in the industry. So she was a bit, she was like, what's wrong with cishet people, cishet men, sorry. And now in our experience, like within sex worker spaces, groaning at basically the concept of cishet male escorts is pretty commonplace. But outside of those spaces, we've realized that people don't actually, they find that quite surprising, or and they don't know what we're talking about. So we've decided to try and tackle this very difficult to tackle subject.
It is interesting. I was speaking to a client a few days ago who is an avid listener of the show also, and I mentioned that this was going to be our upcoming episode, and he said, well, wait, didn't you have a male escort on your podcast? And I was like, we did. He's one of the good ones, and that's something we will chat about. There are good ones, and it is that whole thing of – I think it's that not all men thing, and it's there's a bit of that sort of thing. We're not talking about all men, but actually it's not even a minority we find in this situation. This seems to be a pretty widespread phenomenon, and we're going to try and talk about it today. Like we said, it's a very difficult topic, but yeah, I wanted to clarify that we do know quite a few male escorts who seem really wonderful and who we've not heard anything bad about and who we think are in the industry with the most loving heart and the most generous intentions and doing it really professionally. So we'll talk about that. By cis, we are referring to men who were assigned male at birth, and by het, we mean male escorts who only see female clients. So there are male escorts who see all genders, and there are escorts all along the spectrum of gender. But in this episode, we're referring to that little corner of cis het men exclusively.
So we've divided what we call the problem into two categories because they raise quite different issues. So one is what Holly and I tend to refer to as the fake male escorts. And the other one is the predatory male escorts. So we will start by talking about the fake ones first.
So how do we determine the authenticity of an escort?
Yeah, this is difficult, right? Obviously, we can't. We cannot say for certain whether a person is a sex worker or not. But there are a lot of red flags that we have become familiar with. And there are sort of, I guess, trends that these, what I call fake male escorts, tend to fall into.
Deeming when somebody is an escort or not an escort, I guess, revolves around, have they been booked? And that is not for us to say. We don't know that. And a lot of the time, you don't get booked until you begin being an escort. I guess it's a sort of a weird little chicken or egg thing. You have to create a profile, you have to start a brand and put yourself out there. And so there will be lots of people out there who are not yet escorts, who are on escort sites, and they're starting a career in the industry, and that's okay. Everyone's allowed to start, and all escorts have to start somewhere. What we are referring to are the people where it just didn't work. They gave it a shot. It obviously didn't work out, but they continue with this charade, and it often intensifies over time, possibly for years, where they are role playing a sex worker.
One of the first things we tend to notice is they often won't have high quality photos, and the market for cis hetero male escorts is, I would say, narrower than a lot of other markets. There is a market, but it's not huge, particularly at the moment. And I think it is maybe growing over time as cis hetero women are becoming more aware that it's a thing that they can do, and it's becoming more socially acceptable in some ways. But as a result, like there's a lower demand. So the standard for appearance with male escorts tends to be, you know, very high and quite competitive. So when they don't have, you know, you see a lot of other escorts, their photos, you can see how much effort has gone into them. And it doesn't even necessarily mean money. It's more about effort into making, you know, just making things look really presentable. And a lot of the time with these fake male escorts, their photos, they just look really low quality, basically. And again, everyone has to start somewhere. And, you know, a lot of people get into the sex industry, they are not in the position to splash out on hundreds of dollars of a photo shoot, getting new lingerie, all that sort of stuff. And we're not saying that anybody should. And I would never recommend that somebody get into the industry, like, see if you like the job first, you know, don't spend a whole bunch of money on a massive photo shoot. But it's when they're going on with this charade and they're posting about how they just did a fly me to you, and you're like, well, if you're getting these giant bookings, what are these same four photos of you that somebody took at a wedding and you've cropped your head out of? Like, I just find that very hard to believe. Well,
or a really intense flash photography in front of a wall with chips in it.
Yeah.
Things like that where you're like, yeah. I don't just, it doesn't match up yeah. that you're getting a 4-day Fly Me to
yes.
You and you have two images.
Yeah, it just doesn't quite connect for us. And then similarly only using free ad sites, so not investing any money into the advertising. And I mean yeah. – I'm someone who could be accused of that because there have been plenty of times in my career where I have not paid for any marketing. I've only used social media. So again, with all these things, it's the combo of them together, not any one thing in isolation. And again, if somebody's starting in the industry, they may not have the funds to outlay that cost. But I think we're going to talk about it a bit later. A lot of these men have a full-time job and they've started this as something on the side. So it's not a case of them not having any employment and needing to start from absolute scratch.
We often see with these individuals that they have a social media account where they're really trying to connect with the sex work community, which is vastly female. And so there's lots of commenting on sex worker profiles, but very little happening on their own account in terms of nobody's commenting on their profile, nobody's... there's very little engagement, which, look, lots of people can have poor engagement on their socials. That's life. Some weeks are better than others. But when it seems like they don't have any following and they have existed on Twitter or on Insta or whatever for some time, and they're just continually commenting and fawning over or trying to connect with, quote, quotation marks, female sex workers, that's another really big red flag.
Another really quite telling red flag, which is one I find very funny, is a number of testimonials or reviews that have clearly been written by the same person. And, you know, you can tell from the grammar they use or the particular spelling of one or two words or just the structure. Mm. Like, you know, you can tell when something's written by the same person. And on top of them all being clearly written by the same person, they'll often, you know, they might be brand new to the industry. They've just popped their ad up and they're like, I've been working for a week and they've suddenly got five of these testimonials. And like, maybe Holly and I are wrong, but I don't know of any cishet male escorts that put up an ad and within a week they've had five bookings and got five testimonials. Like, I don't know of any escorts
that happens.
It's pretty wild. Exactly. So that's always a pretty obvious, like, okay, well, you've written these yourself. And and also sometimes their reviews or testimonials, not just that they're written by the same person, but that they're clearly written by a man. Like, sometimes that's something that you can really pick up on.
One of the biggest red flags is other workers saying that that person is a former/problem client of theirs. Now, this is a hard one because I don't think civilians can pick up on this one. Mm. This is something that you may only hear, and it's often not spread widely throughout the community. Yes. It might just be that one sex worker has been interacting with this male escort account, and another sex worker has popped over and said, hey, by the way, just wanted to give you a heads up. So any of that sort of information can be really hard to disseminate or really hard to identify, but it becomes apparent reasonably quickly that a lot of these individuals are former and or problem clients. It's not that people who have been clients of sex workers can't become sex workers. I think a lot of them do, and a lot of sex workers are clients as well. It's fine to admire the industry and to find it really interesting and to want to be part of it. We totally understand that. But yeah, time and time again, we see that these fake male escorts are people who have been cut off by certain providers, and it's almost like they're doing it out of some sense of revenge, or I don't even know what it is, or desperation for attention or validation, which we'll go into a bit later, but that's what we see.
So there are two kind of common scenarios that we see pop up again and again.
Often we see that they are clients of sex workers who have never had intimacy outside of a booking or have had very limited experience being in an intimate setting outside of seeing sex workers. It's a problem because our income is literally dependent on making our clients feel good. So if they have only ever had sex with sex workers, how could they feel that they have any sense of what's required to provide this service for a client themselves? I think, look, some people naturally, I've had some clients who have had very limited sex, and straight off the bat, I am like, wow, that is genuinely really impressive. But I think for most of us, any skill takes practice, and it takes a little while to learn not only your own body but also someone else, and not only sex but also intimacy and making someone feel safe and all of those things. They take a lot of experience. So it would be very unusual for somebody who's had such limited sexual experience to be an elite provider right off the bat.
Agreed. I've had clients who have never had sex before, and they've been like, okay, I need pointers. Tell me what to improve on. And I've been like, that was incredibly enjoyable. You're somebody who's just kind of natural with your body and you're in tune. So it's all good. But some of my clients who have only ever been with sex workers have the most specific needs in the bedroom. Like, they've really honed it down to this one unique way of having sex. So I think, like, when you date a whole bunch of different people, you pick up on all different ways of having sex and being intimate with someone else's body. But when every single person you've had sex with has been paid to be there to cater to your sexual needs, then it's quite possible you'll end up with a really narrow experience, a very tailored experience of sex. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But like, I have these clients that they need all these elements to line up in order for them to enjoy it. We can only do certain positions and we have to do that. And it's timed, and it's the lights have to be a certain way and all this stuff, you know. And so that really doesn't bode well for being a service provider who needs to be able to adapt to a massive range of clients' needs. Like, we as providers, we have to be quite adaptable. So it blows my mind when those sort of people then try to be a provider.
Such a good point. I didn't even think of that, and I can see that. It's so vast. Just on the topic of the ones that are problem clients of sex workers, they can be people who are known more broadly within the community rather than just one or two workers saying quietly, I have had a problem with this person. There are a few individuals who are well known, and they are either massive boundary pushers to the point of borderline assault, I guess we'd say, or straight out assault, or someone who can't understand the limitations of the professional relationship. They will not respect those boundaries. They will not respect no. They will not respect the dynamic of it being a provider and a client situation, or they're straight up rapists. Restraining orders from workers on clients are absolutely not uncommon. Both you and I have had them.
Yeah. And one of the fake male escorts out there is somebody that I have a restraining order on. So,
yeah.
Very much personal experience on that one. So the question is, why the hell would somebody fake being an escort?
Send this one out to the universe, because we need the answers. Yeah. We need a form. We need some therapists on team, on site to help fix this problem. It is bizarre. We've come to some conclusions and we can sort of infer what might be the motivators here.
But we don't know for sure.
No, it's not something I want to go and ask them, because they're delusional. No. They think that they are escorts or they're convinced that they're fooling us.
Yeah.
A big one that I think it's an attempt to gain attention from a sex worker who upset them. They've been rejected, they've been cut off or whatever, and it's a chance for them to stay in the eye of getting the attention from that worker and looking like, well, fuck you, I can do it too, and I'm getting, look how well I'm doing at this.
Yeah, it's like a jilted ex kind of vibe.
It is, isn't it?
Which is quite disturbing. Awesome. Yeah. One reason it could be this perceived access to women by somebody who maybe usually doesn't get much interest, the access both to an industry that is full of a lot of women and non-binary individuals, but also a perceived access to female clients, which they're not actually going to get, but that's what they think they're going to get.
Possibly a fixation on the industry and wanting to feel included. Obviously, the industry is incredibly appealing. We wouldn't have listeners that weren't sex workers if people didn't find the sex industry really interesting. It is. It's appealing. It's very fascinating. People want to be a part of it. And a lot of clients do that in really healthy ways, and that's okay. But these people, it's like they're so desperate to be a part of it, or they see the mystery and the...
It seems sexy.
The sexiness, from the outside. Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's salacious. Exactly. All the media about it's very salacious.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose a bit of the camaraderie as well. They see everyone sort of getting on online and being really sweet to everyone, to each other, and including, and they want to be a part of that. And they think that if they put up an ad and a couple of pictures that we will be opening our arms to them.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's a big one, the seeing that peer support within the industry and the way that we, to an extent, to a point, will support our peers no matter what. That may be something they haven't experienced before, I think. And there's this sense of belonging and community that a lot of people are missing out on and are looking for in life. And they've seen that that is really strong in the sex work community. And so they're sort of trying to be a part of the group, part of the community.
There is obviously a fantasy for a lot of them of being desired or feeling desirable. I think that's a really normal thing to want to feel attractive. We all want to feel sexy or that we have appeal to people. And I think for some people, this is an avenue where they can test that, where they can see whether someone wants to book them. And again, that's fine. But after 2 or 3 years, while you're still sort of cosplaying it and you're not really getting the bookings and I suppose, and look, that doesn't mean that you're not desirable if you're not getting bookings, but you may not be appealing to that market and sex work is just possibly not working for you. There's a million reasons why. You might be giving off the, not you. I'm hoping that you, our listeners are not.
I don't think anyone listening fits into this category. Although maybe they've clicked on it because they're ready. They're like, oh, they're being haters. My haters are talking.
Yeah, but I guess I'm saying that people whose careers don't take off in the sex work industry, it doesn't mean that they're not desirable. It just might mean that they're not marketing properly, or that they're not their photos are not doing them justice, or their copy is a little bit off, or whatever. It's not any indication of someone's desirability.
Also, recession.
And the limited market, as we discussed. But yeah, I think a lot of it is that these dudes they think, oh, I want to feel the way that I think that my sex worker feels. They see that and they think, wow, they look sexy and they probably feel sexy and I want to feel that way.
Which, again, is a complete misinterpretation of what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure there are sex workers out there who it does make them feel very sexy. And I know especially early on in my career, it really helped with my confidence and just being comfortable with my body, like accepting it. But at the same time, it's a job. And it's not about me. I don't post pictures to feel sexy. I post pictures to get work. Like that's the gig.
Yeah.
I think some of them are trying to, or at least part of their goal is to try and gain access to peer-only spaces. If you've been around the sex industry a bit, you will see that there are lots of events and things where it's only peers that are allowed to come, or only peers that are allowed to be a part of the group or share their stories, blah, blah, blah. And that can feel like this exclusive club. And I guess it goes back to that wanting to be a part of the community. And yeah, they want to be able to say, yeah, I'm in that group. In their mind, once they're in that group, they're then around this group of really vulnerable, marginalized people, which is really a disturbing desire. I'm sure that they're not framing it in their mind that way, but it's a bit creepy that they want to be a part of that space.
There is also the obvious idea of easy money and sexy clients. I think they think that they're going to put up an ad and it's going to be $600 an hour and everyone's going to book 8 hours a day and all of the women are going to be really whatever their interpretation of sexy is, and it's just going to be like a Playboy party.
It's like not uncommon for male escorts to say things like, oh, once I had a client and she was, you wouldn't believe it, she was in her 60s. And those of us who have been working in the industry for a long time are like, what? I've had heaps of clients in their 60s and 70s and 80s. Like, probably not heaps in their 80s, but, you know, most of us have experienced that. And so I think for a lot of them, and these are, you know, actual working male escorts who are really surprised when they get a client in their 60s or they get a client who's really overweight or something, you know, and we're all like, that's really standard. Like that, what? Like, and they obviously, I guess, had this idea that all their clients were going to be, as you said, whatever their idea of attractive is. So I guess someone could argue the points that we've raised so far, like how does this differ from a woman or a non-binary person or a trans person first entering the community? Why are we like targeting men? And why does it matter if they're carrying on this charade, if they're not being booked, why does that matter to us?
The reason we find men doing this kind of thing so problematic and not just harmless, weird behavior is really hard to explain, but it's a combination of issues.
It is definitely also just bizarre, weird behavior. Like that is also a factor.
Oh, it's that.
We definitely experience, we're like, what the fuck? But on top of that, we do find it problematic. So the thing is, and we've covered this on the podcast, many women and gender diverse people enter the industry simply because they need to make a living. It's as simple as that. And some do so in really traumatic ways. Some, of course, are just curious or they have glamorized ideas of the industry. That happens. But a lot of people do not enter this industry with a whole lot of choice. In my experience, again, just my experience, every cishet man that I've come across in this industry has either had full-time employment and is doing or pretending to do sex work on the side, or they've even left full-time employment to pursue it, which is an incredibly privileged position to be coming to this industry from. I'm sure there are exceptions, but that is the common story. And the reality is that there is a gendered wage gap in our country, and there is a significant imbalance in the division of domestic labour. Women and gender diverse people make up 51% of the workforce in Australia, which you might expect, but only 22% of CEOs. So broadly speaking, again, very broad, women need sex work. Straight, white, cisgendered, able-bodied, neurotypical men don't. They don't need sex work. And that means that these two groups are entering the industry from these wildly different perspectives with wildly different needs and what they need to get out of it. And again, I'm doing such broad strokes here, but it kind of boils down to we have to earn an income. They have to feel a bit sexy. And that's really at odds.
Another huge difference is that at some point with women and gender diverse people is that they either are a sex worker or they decide it isn't for them and move on. It's the maintained delusion here that's really concerning. It's the inability to accept that their attempt at a new career didn't work, and continuing the charade seems like really delusional and obsessive behavior. The obsession with ingratiating themselves within an industry which is really female focused is really unsettling. And it just further speaks to their to somebody's unwillingness to understand no and to understand boundaries. If you can't accept that your career didn't work, then, or that this sex work thing just isn't working, and you do get a booking, how are you going to understand those boundaries with a vulnerable person? It's just such unhealthy behavior.
Really worrying. Yeah.
To continue this for a long time. Yeah.
Of course, men also have physical and societal advantages over women. And so this kind of power imbalance, it's worrying when they enter an overwhelmingly female space with mostly female peers and clients. The ramifications of a dangerous man seeing women as clients and those women making themselves vulnerable to these men has the potential to be really quite devastating.
It's also rankling from the standpoint that men who are in the industry, whether truly or not, are met with less stigma. And that while women feel they are fighting to be taken seriously, we face discrimination and danger due to stigma, there are men who are using a fake persona in the industry to try to look edgy or cool, or to try to get access to the women's spaces and bodies under false pretenses and without any risk, or with far less risk. It just feels like a piss take, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see it. Obviously, I do a fair bit of stuff with media, this podcast being an example of media, and the demand to hear from male escorts, particularly straight cisgendered male escorts is so high. The media is obsessed with them. And anytime I talk to any kind of journalist, they're like, great, great, thanks. Do you know any men in the industry? What about men? We want to hear from the men. And like, fuck me. Are there not enough industries that are saturated with men? Go to the 22%, go to the, sorry, what is it? Go to the 78% of CEOs that are men. You know, like, why do you have to, oh, it drives me nuts. And that's not to say that I don't think men in the industry should have a voice. But the other thing is, of course, it's always the cishet men. Like, they don't want to hear from a gay male escort. That's not of interest to them, you know? Mm-hmm. And they don't want to hear from a trans man in the industry. That's absolutely not of interest to them. So that's doubly frustrating. And, yeah, the amount of times I see a new male escort pop onto the scene and he's just showing his face and he doesn't take the same risk with showing his face that I do, that we do. Because we know that they are not being targeted at the airports and at hotels. They're not. Mm-hmm. We know, we have documents. Yeah. We have the list of things they look for, and it is not men. So the fact that they can just go out there, put photos of themselves on the internet and face no fucking repercussion while just having fun being like, ooh, I'm an escort. Ooh, how fun is this? While we're out here fucking fighting for rights and for safety and housing, a roof over our fucking heads, is really insulting.
I'm making a huge assumption here, but I think I'm pretty on the money. I imagine that if a potential employer found out that a woman applying for a job had been a sex worker, it would be met with a lot more stigma than a potential employee was a male escort. Totally just a guess there, but I can just – the society's approach to male escorts and to female sex mm-hmm. workers and the historical stigma about women being sexual creatures just says to me that, yeah, it's just far less risk. Mm. Yeah, like you said, for travel, housing.
Well, and the people doing the hiring are men and they go, oh, that's cool.
Exactly.
Okay, so final question on this one. Are women not ever in this category? Are they not fake female escorts out there?
Yeah, sure. I guarantee that there are some. But as women are the more marginalized, less empowered people in society and more at risk when doing this kind of work, we do prefer to give the benefit of the doubt. And I think we both agree that in our hundreds, thousands of interactions with peers over the years, we couldn't count more than a handful in which we felt this was the case. It seems very minimally widespread. And I do believe that these people probably have done one or two bookings here or there. Maybe they just hang on to the industry for a long time for the same reasons we've discussed in terms of a sense of inclusion and things like that. But their driving factors mostly are to try and make a living. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be as common.
Yeah, and generally they have actually done the work at some point.
Exactly.
You know, they may not be.
Once a sex worker.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Whereas with these fake male escorts, we can't tell you for sure, right? We're not following them around, but we're 99% sure that some of these people have never had a single booking and they are going on for months, for years about how they're an escort, and it's just not, it's just all fantasy.
I was scrolling through some of my screenshots last night, and you know I love a screenshot, and you know I love to collect photos. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at one of these, one of the screenshots from this, one of these fake male escorts, and a female worker had posted on Twitter, "Guys who kiss you after they come in your mouth are top tier." And this male escort had had commented, "Especially with my clients. I've always kissed after a mouthful. No worries at all." What? This is another thing they've always got on their ads. They've got like, "Come in mouth with swallow. It's fine. You can swallow my car." Like, you're not offering a service there. It's like they think all these women are gagging to swallow their cum.
Some women love to do that. But it's not
totally fine.
Like a top tier service offering.
No. It's such a misconception to them that's they're going to be the biggest seller.
Yeah.
Especially with my clients, I've always kissed after a mouthful. Like, this woman is going, "Oh, I really want to swallow this man's cum." And then like, it's, yeah, again, some people like it, but I don't think that's going to be, anyway, this guy almost certainly never got booked by a woman in his life, but
it's very funny.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
We could do a whole follow-up episode with screenshots of the cool shit they've said.
We could. I've also got one from him here. Your towards me, your attitude is very appalling. Even your podcast is a joke. Stuck with boredom most of your life. Get out of the kitchen because you have hyposmia. Which...
What? What does that mean? Get out of the kitchen. Like, is he being anti-feminist? Is he being feminist by saying get out of the kitchen?
I don't know if he was talking about my agoraphobia and if he got confused. But yeah, and it's not hyposmia. It's anosmia is where I can't smell. But I don't opposite. Know.
Hyposmia would be too much smell, wouldn't it?
No, I think it's a decreased ability. I think it's close, decreased. But
okay.
It's still bizarre. And I obviously really enjoyed that, so I screenshotted it.
Yeah, okay. Rightio,
get
mate.
Get out of the kitchen because you have hyposmia. Oh, well, but that's probably why I can't be in the kitchen, because I can't smell.
That's what I... Right, yeah.
I'd be a terrible cook.
But
I see. Okay.
Is that a feminist argument? Like...
He knows what's going on in his head. Anyway, sorry to.
I mean,
divert,
sign me up.
To derail this.
I'll pay hundreds of dollars to book that man. Like, okay. So the fake male escorts, they do upset us, but we also do have a little bit of a laugh at them because it is quite absurd, as we've just demonstrated.
Sure.
But arguably, the bigger concern is the men who are sex workers. They do the work. They get bookings and or they might make porn as well. But they're not really people who should be alone in rooms with women, in our opinion. Again, there are cishet male sex workers who are not like this, who are professionals and who we've seen firsthand take their jobs seriously and take them as jobs. And we so wish that we could give them all the benefit of the doubt. And I think everybody that enters this industry starts from that place. You see it all the time that people go, oh, Why men can be escorts too. And we all go, well, yeah, but chances are, babe. Mm. And then a few months later they go, yeah, okay. Because the sheer amount of straight men in this industry who have allegedly assaulted women is just absurdly high. It's just the numbers, the math's not mathing. Like it's just gross. So when we talk about male escorts who are predators, what do we mean? What are we talking about? Predatory behavior.
The things that, from our perspective as sex workers, that we see is people who are not treating it like a job, for starters. So sliding into other sex workers' DMs, little things like, oh, hey, I'm going to be a bit careful there because as sex workers, we do slide into each other's DMs a lot and we will professionally say, I really love your vibe with this. Would you like to create some content or would you like to double together or whatever? That's all fine. But it's this sliding in with a bit of sleaze and a bit of, I can't really define it. Can you define it a little bit better?
Well, I've never had a female or a non-binary sex worker slide into my DMs and say, oh, you're so fucking hot. Can we make content together? They've said,
that's perfect.
Wow,
that's
I really admire you. Like they, you know, they say, I love the advocacy that you do for the industry and I'd so be an honor to do content with something. You don't have to blow me up my ass, you know.
It's the tone.
But it's the tone.
Yeah, yeah.
They've never just objectified me. Whereas these men, they come in and they're like, oh, that ass is so good. We'd make really hot content together. And I'm like, oh, this is a business transaction, babes. This isn't. And So I went to an industry event where there was actually quite a lot of straight male sex workers there. And that's kind of unusual. They're not like a lot of the spaces I'm in, the advocacy spaces and stuff, there aren't very many men there in general. But this particular event was not an advocacy space. It was just a social event. And there was quite a lot of guys there. And it felt, again, this is just my personal, how it felt to me. But it felt like they were there to hook up. It didn't feel like when I was there with other female and non-binary workers, it felt like we were making industry connections. It was an industry event and we were there to talk, to, you know, talk shop, whatever. But these dudes were like hitting on me and all my friends. Like it was like they came to a dating, like a singles night. That's what it felt like. It felt like a fucking singles night. And I was like, this is, and people hook up at industry events all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. Like if you hit it off with someone and you like go nuts, you know, but it just felt like they were so excited to be at this thing because there was a bunch of women there that they could crack onto. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it felt like. And I could be perceiving that wrong, but I did not enjoy it.
We have also witnessed or heard about some male sex workers who have assaulted female peers in peer spaces and on porn shoots.
And that stuff's really tricky because a lot of the time, more often than not, they can't speak publicly about that. It might be because there's legal implications of doing so. It might be because they've gone to the police and they've been told they shouldn't say anything publicly, blah, blah, blah. Because this is a business, an industry space, then there's things about risk to reputation, affect the way it will affect your business, your income, all of that sort of stuff. So a lot of this stuff we hear about, and we know that potential clients are not hearing about it. And I don't know what the answer is there. It's really difficult.
Yeah. I do see some sex workers, in fact, more frequently than I should. And I think clients would have seen this because this is usually publicly posted, but sex workers posting, if I have shot porn, if I have shot with somebody in the past, that is not an endorsement of that person. If you would like to know my opinion on somebody before shooting with them, please contact me and I'll guide you. So many times I've seen people post that. And so they've obviously worked with somebody and it's been a bad experience or something bad has come of that, but they can't post that publicly. So they basically are just doing their best to warn people to say, if you want my advice, and you're planning on working with this person, come to me, which is really hard because if that creator that has done something bad is also a full service provider, then there's a potential that they're also doing unsafe things with clients, but that's something that you just can't warn people about.
So. Yeah. And it's the same with we can do this podcast, for example, and this is a way that I feel like we are warning people.
Yeah.
But because again, we can't name names. And so we're also potentially damaging the business of people who are legitimate professionals, which is not our intention, but there might be a little bit of that collateral that happens as well.
Sure.
And we also, the last thing I want is to stop women, particularly cishet women, from being clients of sex workers, because I love that we're seeing more and more of that. So it is so hard to talk about this because part of me, I don't know what the answer is, because there's so many predators out there and I don't want women booking them, but I don't want that to stop women booking escorts in general. And I can't tell you who they are. So we're kind of fucked.
I think it's a really important thing for us to bring attention to, if only, as you said, because people do respond to us and sort of go, why the disdain for male sex workers? And it's important that we sit here and have a little bit of a chat about the distinction between or what makes somebody dangerous or concerning in the industry. And this may or may not help you, but it might just make people a little bit more aware of our hesitation, and also if you are looking at booking a male sex worker, maybe it will just make you a little bit more mindful, and that's all we can do.
So that's all the stuff that we see and that's hard for us to talk about publicly, but I guess it's important as well for us to explain things that clients might experience that we would consider to be predatory behavior and not acceptable behavior.
Doing things without consent. That is a huge one, because as providers, we are supposed to be the professionals here. We are supposed to be reasonably trustworthy and safe. So if you're making yourself vulnerable and putting yourself in a space with a sex worker where you might let your guard down a little bit, you should be able to know or to trust that they're not going to do anything that you are not wholeheartedly agreeing to. There should be enthusiastic consent, and that should be very clear. There is also instances of people not using condoms, or stealthing, or maybe offering too many substances, and taking advantage of somebody who is intoxicated, ejaculating in or on you, again, without consent. There are kink elements which can become too intense, slapping, choking, things like that, which can be really dangerous.
Maybe not even too intense. If those things start happening without them being discussed, that's absolutely not cool.
Yeah.
If somebody just starts spanking you or starts pulling your hair, or the big one these days is just puts the freaking hand around your neck, That's not okay. And a professional should never be, I mean, they should be experts in consent. The expectation should be that much higher for a professional. I think another one that I've, and this is, again, it's bloody tricky, but some male escorts will ask for a photo of their potential clients before deciding whether they'll see them or not. And there is the argument to be made that for people in male bodies, you know, their arousal or lack of arousal is much more apparent than people in female bodies,
mm-hmm.
And that it is much harder to, you know, fake. And so, you know, there are people that say that for a male escort, that they need to be attracted to their clients. And look, I can't speak to what it's like to have a penis, right? Mm-hmm. But it really, I don't know, makes me uncomfortable. I think that if you're not able to find attractive qualities in your clients and find a way to make it work and to make it an enjoyable experience, then maybe it's not the job for you. Like it's tough, big gray area, but if they ask for a photo of what you look like before agreeing to the booking, I'm sus on that. And if they ask for nudes, which has happened as well, obviously, no. What the fuck? No. Don't be sending photos of yourself naked to people you don't know. I mean, I do that all the time, but I also have nothing left to lose. Now, obviously, in any situation where there are potential victims, the onus is not on the victim to keep themselves safe. We would prefer if people just stopped being abusive. That would be ideal. But in the interest, we put this episode together and we knew that people were going to say, well, what can I do to protect myself? And so we've brainstormed some ideas, but we just want to make it clear that this should not be your responsibility, but here's some stuff you may want to take on board.
Like we suggest, whenever you book any escort, we think you should check out their socials. Have a really good look. See what their interactions are like with their peers. But be careful with that. Just because we follow somebody on social media or, as I said before, we've worked with them in the past, that doesn't mean we endorse them. And that applies to workers of all genders. Look for somebody who seems welcomed by the community, doesn't have a chip on their shoulder, seems to have a good nature. And beyond that, you can even look for people who you feel like you have shared interests with. I think just looking for somebody who you think is the hottest looking or the cheapest or whatever it is going to get you into all sorts of trouble. I think you should be looking for a good soul.
Yeah, which is the advice we would give to anyone booking any sex worker, isn't it, really?
Mm, yes.
So one option, and hopefully the community doesn't cancel us for this, is that you could potentially contact a female worker that they've interacted with on the socials. So generally it is really frowned upon to contact a sex worker for any reason other than to make a booking or to buy something. But I do think a lot of us understand the trickiness with this side of things. And I know, you know, of the very few male escorts that I've interacted with online, if somebody came into my DMs and said, hey, I'm considering booking this person, I see you've interacted with him, do you think he's okay? You know, I would not be able to respond and say, yes, 100%, he's a good man and he would never hurt anyone, because we can't say that about anyone. But I'd be really fine with somebody doing that, and I'd be happy to share what my experiences are. You could definitely sweeten the deal by sending them a small beam or a cash app, depending where you are in the world, for their time. And yeah, look, some workers are not going to appreciate you contacting them asking for that information, but I think a lot would understand, and there'd particularly be that solidarity between women, I think.
I would suggest doing the same things you would do if you were going on an unpaid date. Let a friend know where you're going, organise a time to check in afterwards, meet the worker in a public place. If you do meet them somewhere in public and then you decide you don't feel comfortable going somewhere private with them, unfortunately, you're not likely to be able to get your money back. And that would be the same with any sex worker, but you've really got to value your safety. If you don't feel right, if something feels off, it's not worth, there's no money that is worth your safety.
I had a client just the other day, a first-time client, who was a guy who did, apart from the meeting in a public place, because I don't really offer that, he did all these things. And he told me, he confessed towards the end that he was like, I'd had such a great time, but he said he had no idea what to expect. So his mate knew where he was. He'd organized a time to check in and like he did all that. And I was like, that's bloody brilliant. Great. Like, good on you. And then he was like, well, I'm so relieved. It was a really great experience. But I, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with anyone doing that sort of thing when you're meeting a stranger. It's fair enough. On the meeting in a public place thing, a lot of male escorts do actually offer social bookings or like get to know you style introductions. And I think that I think the reason a lot of them do that is because they are aware of this problem, or they may even do just like Zoom call, short little chats just to get a little vibe. So that's definitely something that I think is, I think that's a great idea before going into a bedroom setting with them.
If they state that they see clients of all genders, that can be a green flag. We tend to find that they're less they're less dodgy.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to word that. The queers. We just
we just love the queers.
We're all about it.
And that's not to say, like, obviously we are also aware that queer people can be abusers and predators. Oh, yeah. That is, you know, absolutely. But generally, just on the statistics in the industry, they seem to we have better experiences with them.
Mm.
My big tip is do not listen to awards. If they've got blah, 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 winner, triple winner of the whatever, they don't mean a thing. They mean absolutely nothing. Yeah. And if anything to me, they tend to be a little bit of a red flag, which might be controversial to say. But the people that run awards ceremonies are just some people. They're not like there's no kind of there's no committee, there's no no governing body that vets the people who have been nominated or who win. The people who win usually are their mates or the people who pay the most money. And often it's often the people who win, especially in the male categories, are the abusive ones. And a lot of the good the good male escorts will ask to not be nominated for those sorts of things. The reason I say that's a controversial take is that some people do see value in these awards for a marketing thing. And they say, no, I will engage with these because I want to be able to put that because that is going to help bring people in. And people are going to do what they've got to do to get the bookings. But don't be swayed by that. Don't see that award and go, wow, they must be a really good client. Sorry, they must be a really good sex worker. Because it does, it literally, it means nothing. The people who judge have not been in bookings with these people.
Take care to limit your substance use when you're first meeting a new person alone so you can be in control as much as possible. I know that you can be really nervous and that sometimes a little bit of Dutch courage helps. And a lot of the time it's really nice to share a drink with your provider. That's fine. You can bring a bottle with you. And I'm not suggesting that they're going to spike your drink, but it's always sensible to keep an eye on your drinks in general. I think we, as women, we know that. But that's fine to have a couple of glasses. But just try to be really aware of your intoxication levels so that you are able to make those decisions regarding consent much more comfortably and you're much more cognizant of what's happening around you, as well as other substances. I know that people like to use all sorts of things in the bedroom, and that's absolutely fine. You can make your own decisions as an adult. But I would just try to keep it quite limited on that first time meeting someone or that first few times so that you can build that trust.
My big tip, kind of for anyone going into any sexual situation, but I think particularly for people who have been socialized as women or people in the queer community as well, where we have been taught to maybe be a bit quieter, not come across as too confident or brash or whatever, is to really sit down and have a think about your limits beforehand. And make sure that you are confident articulating and asserting those. So I have little phrases that I literally will sit there and go, if this happens, I'm going to say this. And I drill the phrase in my head because, and I know it probably sounds really lame, but I know, and I learned this in the industry and I learned it the hard way because early on, I know that if I get shocked or surprised by something, I cannot find the words. I get really kind of frozen. I guess I'm a freeze response person, and I just kind of wait for it to end. But if I'm able to go, this is a thing that could happen to me, or this is a thing that could pop up that they might ask for, and when they do, I'm going to say this. Then when it happens, I go, this is that situation that I prepared myself for, and that preparedness is really valuable to me as somebody who historically has really struggled with asserting themselves in those situations. It's hard because you kind of – you can't think about every possibility And sometimes someone will suggest something that is just so far removed from what you could ever have thought of that you're like, I don't even, what? but generally, yeah, I mean, thinking about things like if they ask to not use a condom, how am I going to react to that? And you may decide that that's actually something you really want and you're going to be really excited about that and go for it. That's, you make your own choices about that. But having that decision in place beforehand is so helpful.
Now, what should you do if you have concerns about an experience that you had with an escort?
So if you've been assaulted, our advice is to immediately attend the emergency department for assessment, to seek professional counselling, and possibly to report to police. It's very hard for us to be supportive of police due to the approach that police have towards sex workers and marginalised people in a lot of areas. But reporting crime against you is important if you feel that you're able to do that.
If you feel emotionally damaged or unsure about things that have happened during interactions with a sex worker, we advise to speak to a therapist to help you work through those things and identify if there has been a crime. Sometimes it's not so black and white.
I think often it's
and
not.
Often, yes. And I think a professional can really help you work through those emotions and work through what actually happened.
So, Holly, is this whole thing just he said, she said? Like, who made you and I the adjudicators?
Look, a lot of what we've talked about in this episode is really hard to define and really hard to articulate, although I must say I think we've done a really good job at trying. we've done our best, but it's such a combination of factors that make someone's behaviour concerning, and only a factor or two more beyond that before that behaviour is definitively dangerous. All we can do here is discuss the red flags that we see and the many tales that we've heard on the issue from the community around us and the women who've reached out to us and our peers as clients. We have our opinions on who we think is dangerous or who we think is fake, but we're not in a position to verify that or to broadcast it because a lot of it is ascertained via hearsay or our own connecting of the dots that we see in the nuance. We can recommend male providers that we have heard only good things about, but we can never guarantee the safety of any individual. One person's abuser is another person's saint.
Yeah.
Just before we move on, I will say one thing. I am incredibly hesitant to follow male sex workers on social media. I will not follow back for a long time. I will wait, and sometimes I just never will. And I will say, if I am following a male sex worker back on social media, it means that I've probably heard pretty good things about them. So I've made that a point. I am not endorsing them, but if you're a follower of mine and you've noticed that I follow a male sex worker, it means that I've probably heard pretty good things about them. So that's just a little sneaky hint of who might be the better eggs in the industry.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes I follow people because I want to see the absurdity. So I'm not don't do that with me, but do it with Holly.
Yeah.
Sometimes like this shit is fucked. I need to keep track of it when they inevitably go private. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you love a hate watch.
Yeah. We are going to wrap things up with a shit people say. Was one. It turned out quite good, I think, but so this person sent me an email and said, "Hello, Jenna," with a rose, which is always odd. But anyway, like an emoji rose, but whatever, that's fine. I would really love to see you tonight, any time that suits you. I just can't book any earlier than next week on your website, which I just love
it. Every time.
The amount of people that are like, oh, it's not showing any bookings earlier than blah, blah. And I'm like, well, that's when the next booking is. Like, what's wrong with you? So I responded. I said, then that's when I'm next available, with a smiley face. And he said, okay, no worries. Then 3 days later, so he learned about the advanced booking. He said, hi, Jenna, how can I make a booking next Thursday for 9:30 p.m. in call, 1 hour, as the latest in bookings you have is 5 p.m.? And I said, well, you can't. My in-calls end at 6 p.m. Like, if I went to book in with my beauty therapist and the latest appointment they had available was at 4, I wouldn't send them an email being like, how do I make a booking for 9? I just wouldn't. It's just wild to me. Anyway,
It really does come back to that impression that we're sitting around all day, all night, that we work at night, waiting.
Yeah, and 9:30, I'm in my PJs, mate.
Yeah.
And so I said, you can't. My in-calls end at 6 p.m. And then he said, any chance you can make an exception for me? Because I finish work at 7 p.m. By the time I get home and change, 9:30 will be the earliest I could be at your place. Please, XX. And I just... this thing, it just, you know, it gets me. So I responded, lol, sure, I'll just tell my family to wear noise-canceling earplugs. Because I just, like, the audacity to be like, oh, that's when your hours end? Please make an exception because I don't finish work. I don't care. I don't give a shit when you finish work. It's got absolutely nothing to do with me. But then this was the shit people say. He responded with, you're definitely not seeing clients in the family home, laughing emoji. And, like, what? And then he said, I'm happy to pay a deposit. Well, yeah, you'll have to. Although he said via PayID or Beam. You won't be doing it via PayID, mate, obviously. Wish I can see you early, but unfortunately that's my working hours. Okay, well, sucks to be you. I responded and I said, lol, what? You think the sex workers have two whole houses in this economy? Like, mate. Of course I'm working from the family home. And you know, it's not his fault. That's just a common misconception. And actually, after we put this episode together, I listened to the latest episode of one of my favorite podcasts, which is a true crime podcast. And generally, they deal with sex work reasonably well. They always refer to us as sex workers and they try to get things right. But what was really interesting, they were talking about this sex worker who had invited the client to her house. And they said, and that, first of all, is very strange because why on earth would a sex worker ever have a client in their own home? And I was like, guys, all the time. That's like, we don't have many houses. Like, what are you talking about? and not everyone, obviously. There are plenty of sex workers who are not comfortable having clients in their own home, and that's fine. But a lot of us do because cost of living crisis. Hello. Anyway, so he came back and said, well, of course not, but I know that most of them rent hotel rooms or a place to meet clients. And like, if you want to do an out call, that's cool. You can do that. But I'm not adding to my living costs. Like, sorry, not my. But I already pay for the space. I already pay for the square footage of my in-call space. I'm not going to also hire another space just because you want your dick wet at 9:30. Like, that's just not, you know. He said, anyway, I promise to be silently excited with you, if that helps. I said, oh, my God, it absolutely does not help. What? I'll go back to his message. He said, I don't usually see many escorts. I'm picky with how, or I guess that means who I see, as I have to feel chemistry and a shared connection. Oh, and a sexual connection. I felt a good vibe from your photos and what you wrote about your lovely self on the profile. I would really love to see you, Jenna. Okay. Then come see me or good. Book a fucking room. Yeah.
Then book it properly.
Yeah. So I said, OMG, it absolutely does not help. You've tried to push my clearly communicated boundaries multiple times now. Do you think that makes me feel at all comfortable being alone in a room with you? And this is what I don't, how have so many men lived through fucking Me Too and they do not under, they've not lived through fucking me as well. They've lived through fucking hashtag Me Too.
Fucking me too.
They survived. But how have they?
You should have a t-shirt.
I survived. I survived,
Jenna Love. Just like squirt emojis.
Okay. I've got to wait for Holly to stop laughing.
I survived Jenna Love and all I got was this t-shirt.
And it's just wet. Like, it's just permanently wet. It's like wet look fabric.
Okay, sorry. Carry on.
So this is what I don't get, how these men have lived through that era and they still don't understand that as a woman, I don't want to be alone in a room with a man who has demonstrated a lack of care for boundaries. What is wrong with your brain? My God. So then I said, you know, if you would like to rent a hotel room, you are welcome to book an out call. It's not my problem in the slightest that you work until 7 p.m. Would you ask a furniture store to make an exception and stay open late just for you? Either do what everyone else does and take time off work or book an out call. or find someone else. And he came back and he said, you're right. I didn't mean to push your boundaries. I was only asking if it was possible. I'll organize something and I'll let you know. So that's great. That's a great outcome. Yeah. But he pushed my boundary. Like, this is what he doesn't realize what he's done. I was just asking, is it possible? So what you did was twice went onto my website and saw that that spot wasn't available. Also, my hours are listed and it clearly says that I don't do in calls outside of those hours. So that's three times you've been told of that boundary. Then you've emailed and said, how do I make a booking for that time? Because the website isn't letting me. And I've said, you can't. And then you said, could you make an exception? And then I said, yeah, I'll tell them to, you know, wear noise cancelling earplugs. And then you said, oh, I could be silent. Does that, like, so you've pushed that, you've been told no like six fucking times by now. And that's what, that's why I want to share these shit people say, shit people say. I don't know. Not because this person is not a bad person. And I hope that we can find a time to meet up. They sound nice, but the cluelessness of not realizing that you are repeatedly pushing boundaries is a massive problem. And we got to sort it out. So that's why we talk about this shit.
Thank you to sexy patrons, our new giving somebody, Jennifer, our new very generous somebody, JD, our even more generous somebodies, Alex, Dave, the Ashley Stafford, the Rhiannon Rhodes, Nomad, Adele,
Andrew, our secret admirer, our footstool, Lachlan, Leslie, Sub London, Mr. E, NK, the Ophelia Parker, Scott C, Simon, Steve, Timmy, Wheezy, Luke, Frankie, Is Lost in Thoughts, Cuddle Koala, the Sasha Sins, and Stanley Doolittle.
And our extremely generous somebodies, Aaron, Andrew, Adam Smith, Pete, Sienna Saint, Adam Moore, and Tim.
Such enthusiasm.
I'm so excited about the extreme generosity in this economy.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for listening. We had a fair bit of hesitation about putting this episode together, and after we've recorded it, we're going to have hesitation about releasing it. So if you've made it this far, then we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, don't cancel us.
Or do. Like, do whatever you want, but.
Yeah, fuck, whatever. Just keep booking us. That's the main thing.
That's it.
Cancel me, but make sure my bills are paid.
That's all we want. Mwah. Bye. Please look out for us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon. Our name everywhere is Somebody You Pod, as in podcast. Our Patreon starts at just $3 a month, and you can get all of our episodes ad-free and a day early, plus bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes action, bloopers, and more. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the voices of sex workers. And remember, somebody you love might just be a sex worker.